Okay, we're back in session. We have a timed item at 1 o'clock, which it appears to be 1 o'clock. It's now 1 p.m. on April 5th, 2019. This is the informal interview of John McCain, Ph.D., in case number 1821. Board members, the materials for this agenda item are located in your electronic folder. Dr. McCain, please come forward. Are you represented by legal counsel today?
Yes, John Auger here for Dr. McCain.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I'm Dr. Bohansky, chair of the board. The other board members and board staff will now introduce themselves. Dr. Davies?
Sorry, doctor. I didn't know which way we were starting. Dr. Davies, I am a behavior analyst and a board member.
Yes, I'm Dr. Flowers, psychologist, board member.
Hi, I'm Tammy Shreve. I represent the public.
Dr. Davis Wilson, I'm behavior analyst.
Dr. Matt Meyer, psychology.
Joe Donaldson, public member.
With us, we have Sabrina Kahn, who represents the Office of the Attorney General.
Hi. Jenna Jones, executive director.
Kathy Foss, licensing specialist.
Thank you very much. This proceeding is being audio taped, so everyone must speak loudly and clearly. And only one person at a time, please. You have all received a letter informing us about the matters that we'll be discussing today and possible actions that the board may take on an informal, as a result of the informal interview. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of the case. Board members have read all the materials and any additional submissions. If it's necessary to refer to clients or patients during the interview, please do so only by initials. I will read the allegations from the informal interview notice, and then we will interview you. Dr. McCain, the allegations brought against you in case number 1821 are as follows. ARS 32-2061-16H, for possibly failing or refusing to maintain and retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to psychological services provided to a client or patient. I will now swear you in, please, sir, if you could raise your right hand. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, sir?
I do.
Thank you. Dr. McCain, do you or your legal counsel wish to make any opening remarks?
I would, just very briefly.
Thank you, sir. Go ahead.
Dr. McCain and I have gone over the allegation that is before the board today, and in guiding the board's questions, I would just respectfully submit that there are really two elements to the statute that is at issue. One is whether or not Dr. McCain was actually providing psychological services to a client or patient, and whether he was required to maintain professional records pertaining to that. This was a supervisory issue. These services were not related to a client or patient. He was required to keep separate records related to his supervision of the supervisee. And so for that reason, this statute would not apply to that type of conduct. To the extent that the board believes that his supervision does pertain to psychological services that the supervisee was providing to a client or patient, it requires that he maintain adequate professional records. I would, again, respectfully submit that adequate professional records in this situation are records sufficient to support the licensee's application for licensure before the Board of Behavioral Health. We provided those records to the board previously. There are more than double the amount of hours. The Board of Behavioral Health has not weighed in, nor have we heard any evidence from anyone else that those records are not sufficient to support the application or would not have been had the licensee chose to submit them. I would suggest that on their face they are compliant with all of the elements that the code requires to be set forth in those records. So for those two reasons, I believe that this particular statute would not apply to Dr. McCain's conduct, or at least would not support any kind of direct action against his license or any type of indirect action against his license. And with that, I'll leave it to you to ask questions.
Thank you very much, sir. To begin the interview, we'll start with a summary of the case by our lead board member on this matter, Dr. Flowers.
Yes, members of the board, I'm the lead board member in this case and provide a brief factual overview. The complainant is the Arizona Board of Behavioral Health Examiners, BBHE. The BBHE said that Dr. McCain did not provide adequate supervision to a licensed master social worker applicant. BBHE voted to forward the complaint to us for review of Dr. McCain's supervision. The supervision form submitted to BBHE for Dr. McCain's supervision of the applicant said that the dates of supervision were from April 2012 to August 2017, that there were 3,577 total hours of experience and 161 total hours of clinical supervision. During the BBHE's review of the application, it was noted that the applicant completed the supervision notes, which did not meet their requirements, and also that the supervision notes should be contemporaneously written by the clinical supervisor with at least the following in each clinical supervision session: the day and duration of the supervision session, the description of topics discussed, and the name and signature of the individual receiving clinical supervision. Also, the name and signature of the clinical supervisor and the date signed, and whether the clinical supervision occurred on a group or individual basis. Other concerns with Dr. McCain's supervision of the applicant were that Dr. McCain and the applicant submitted 161 hours supervision, but there were only 35 hours of clinical supervision that could be confirmed with the supervision notes that were provided. BBHE also found other problems in regards to documentation of the supervision and how it was done. And in response to the complaints, Dr. McCain said that the allegation that the applicant did not receive 161 hours of supervision was true, he did it through weekly intensive outpatient substance abuse team meetings, and also those meetings lasted 2 hours. And additionally, there were an additional 55 hours of individual supervision provided to the applicant. And so we said between the individual supervision and the group supervision, there were 161 hours. And he did admit that the individual supervision sessions were not always documented. And he said that he was unaware of the requirement that supervision notes be authored by the supervisor. Said that because the applicant was LMSW, who was receiving supervision from an LCSW, he did not become concerned with the supervision notes. He said that the use of electronic record system also resulted in record-keeping problems. He expressed regrets for not being more diligent in following up with the applicant regarding the supervision notes. He said that the applicant's supervision by an LCSW was more applicable due to the license that the applicant was requesting. Dr. McCain said that he was more focused on her development as a clinician rather than being studious in the documentation of her individual hours and issues related to electronic medical records. But he did say that all the supervision he attested to on the form indeed was accurate. He said that in response to the concerns expressed by the Complaint Screening Committee, he completed several continuing ed courses. They included clinical supervision tutorial on Arizona state regulations approved by BBHE, the Arizona statutes regulations tutorial approved by the BBHE, and clinical supervision and health service psychology in regards to applications of the APA guidelines. He asked that the board issue him a letter of concern if the board continues to have concerns. And that concludes my summary of the complaint.
Thank you very much. We will proceed with questions for Dr. McCain. Does any board member have questions for Dr.?
Yes, I have several. I asked you some over the phone. It's good to see you in person.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Was the applicant licensed during the time that you supervised her?
She was not licensed for independent practice. She was licensed as an associate license.
Okay.
And she would have to work under the supervision of a licensed professional.
Okay, but it's like a limited license with the BBHE, but it was a license?
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
And I'm wondering if the LCSW who supervised her was also one of your staff members.
She became one of my staff members.
Okay, this was after you started working with the applicant?
This is, let's see, yes.
Okay.
After I started working with the applicant, which was late 2012, where I recruited her on my team prior to her going on pregnancy leave.
So she was somebody you supervised as well?
Right. The LCSW was independently licensed.
Okay. So she wasn't necessarily your employee, but she worked on the same team?
She joined our team a few years later, primarily to work with adults and families.
Okay. Yeah. I guess what I was saying is sometimes in companies, there's somebody in charge of the whole operation. I'm wondering if that was you or you worked there with her, but you weren't the supervisor of her.
In terms of the clinicals, I guess delivery of services for the high-risk youth program, that was my program. So people, even though they were under supervision for other supervisors for licensing purposes, they were still working with me for trainings with this specific special needs population.
Okay. And as I recall in talking to you before, you provided supervision to the applicant because she was an employee, but there was no written agreement with the applicant that you would provide the kind of supervision needed to meet the requirements of BBHE.
That's correct. That her interest was in developing skill with a specific population, and at that time, she actually was not intending to pursue licensing.
Okay, so basically, she was a valued employee.
Very valued.
You're working with her, but there was no contract that you would provide that kind of supervision needed for licensure.
Yes, the supervision was specifically dedicated to working with high-risk youth.
Okay.
And that she had another supervisor, LCSW, for licensing purposes. But as I said, at that time, until 2016 or 17, she was not pursuing licensure. She joined the organization in 2006, which means she had been there for nine years, before she chose, at my request, to pursue licensure.
Okay, and when this process started, what was your understanding regarding how the supervision would need to be provided and documented in order to meet the requirements of BBHE?
Yes. It's a reason why I restructured my contract and got permission or approval from the Board of Behavioral Health to provide supervision. Because of the way the electronic record system was set up, it doesn't allow for group supervision forms, so I kept those, my personal record, on my own. Okay. The approval for supervision by the Board of Behavioral Health was in January 2016. Which means I was not able to or approve for supervising potential licensees until January 2016.
Okay, so part of the time you were licensed to do that or given the authority to do that?
From 2016 on, I got Board of Behavioral approval to provide supervision for LMSWs, social workers, that were looking for licensure, yes.
Did they give you information regarding what would be required for that?
Yes, they did. Okay. In fact, I took, in preparation for that, I did take a course on clinical supervision that went over the records. As I said, I don't recall, I may have missed it, but I don't recall there being a provision that required me to author the records myself, and I acknowledge that.
Okay, and I guess led to my next question here. What is your current understanding of what's needed, and how would you handle this situation should it arise again?
Well, I've already corrected it, and I think it'd be useful to know I corrected the problem before my first appearance before the board. In I think it was August of 20, I received a copy for the first time that there was a complaint or that there was a hearing for my supervisees. I got a copy of the investigative interview, and that's when I first realized that there was a problem with the supervision records. At that time, I went to my organization and asked them to rekey the electronic records so that as a supervisor, we could input the forms as opposed to waiting for the licensees to put it. From that date, and I have records of that, from that date on, August 2017, I have meticulous records where I was inputting the records because I had control of the situation up through the current day. So the problem of electronic input, I corrected before this even came before the board. In addition to restudying the statutes, realizing that there are provisions like authoring the records I was unaware of, and I chose to take a second course just to make sure that not only was I aware of Board of Behavioral Health, but also reviewing the APA guidelines for supervision as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Thank you.
Are there other questions from board members?
I do.
Ms. Shreve, please.
I'm just trying to wrap this all in my head. Sure. A lot of information. Thank you.
It is.
So you are not certified, licensed, whatever it is, to supervise until January 2016?
I was not licensed to supervise people who were social workers until January 2016. I was supervising PhD candidates. I was supervising actually other psychologists because that's within my license to supervise PhDs as a psychologist. But to go outside my guild, that would include licensed counselors, licensed social workers, marriage and family, alcohol and drug counselors. I would have to get approval from the Board of Behavioral Health.
Because some of the hours that she put in were for time before that?
Yes, because we did meet before that as part of meetings with our clinical team. And she documented some of those, and some of them she didn't. But I documented all of my contacts with my team meeting in order to make sure that those hours would be able to be applicable towards her licensure.
So supervision form submitted to BBHG for Dr. McCain, supervision of the applicant indicated dates of supervision were April 2012 to August 2017 with like 3,500 hours of experience. So you're saying then until January 2016, you couldn't have supervised?
No. I'm saying I didn't have Board of Behavioral Health approval, so the hours would apply to licensure. But I can supervise interns. I can supervise any members of a clinical team. But I require Board of Behavioral Health approval to supervise people outside my guild.
Okay. So in essence, this was outside your guild. This was outside.
The supervision provided was within the context of my professional duties.
Let me try to help you.
Okay.
It gets confusing. We have a psychology board that manages psychologists, and as psychologists, we tend to supervise other psychologists.
Mm-hmm.
I supervise postdoctoral fellows in my organization. My organization also has social workers and counselors and what have you. I'm not eligible to supervise them because I have not gone to the Board of Behavioral Health and jumped through their hoops and gotten there on their roster that says I can supervise LPCs or social workers. And then even within that, even if I did that, social workers, I got a limited number of hours I can supervise them, and they have another set of hours they need a social worker to supervise them. The Behavioral Health Board has very different standings. Now, in agencies, we have to do clinical supervision, but also there's something called clinical oversight. This is what I think Dr. mixes up a little bit here, in that I can provide clinical oversight. That's not a problem. My clinical oversight assures the program is running, assures the clients are getting what they want, assures things are happening. But you can't use that toward licensure.
Got it.
Because I'm not qualified. I didn't do what he did to go get qualified. All staff in programs need clinical oversight.
Mm-hmm.
only those going for licensure need licensure supervision. Does that help?
That does. Yeah, I think I was confused.
Yeah. Thank you for that clarification, too, of oversight versus supervision. That was maybe poorly chosen words on my part, so I apologize for that.
And that kind of leads into my question. So, Mr. Chair, if it's all right, that time period, 412, is where essentially verification forms start. Were you aware that the applicant for the Behavioral Health Examiners Board was working towards licensure at that time?
At that time, she wasn't. That it wasn't until 2016 that I convinced her to pursue licensure because I have a retirement plan. And I was training her specifically to take over my program. And I said, I can't turn this program over to you until you have an independent license. So she actually pursued licensure beginning 2016-17 because basically I said, when I leave, it's going to be somebody else's program unless you get licensed. But prior to that, she wasn't pursuing licensure, which she mentions in the Board of Behavioral Health records, by the way. She says that from that period, from keep in mind, she came to the organization 2006. So she was working for over 7 years with no application for licensure, and she pursued it on my encouragement.
So the verification forms 412 to 8, 2017, those are verification forms for clinical supervision, because then we have a, you know, there's another discussion of clinical supervision forms coming in from 215 to 817. So going to your oversight and clinical supervision piece. I guess what my question is, when she did the applicant just take the information that started in 12 and turn it in as part of her application, not realizing that there was essentially a hard start date for clinical supervision in 2016?
Okay. I can't really tell you what she was thinking, but also, keep in mind, I met with her twice to recruit her onto my clinical team, 2012. And then she went on maternity leave and was not in the agency until 2013. Then she came back and worked part-time. And at that time, juggling parenthood, birth to twins, she almost lost her job. So I can't tell you what she was thinking at the time. I can just tell you what her priorities are, as she stated to me, and that is she wanted to get good at what she, her quote, good at what I do. She saw me, observed groups. She attended sessions when I was running the internship program. I ran a didactic series. She sat in on those, and that's what led her to come to me for guidance on clinical work because, frankly, she was unhappy with the structure of the current teen program and had some legitimate concerns about it before I took it over.
So let me make my question clear. Had she only turned in documentation from 16 until whatever the end date is, would any of these issues have occurred?
No. If she had turned in 2016 then, I wouldn't be sitting here today, and she would have completed her license.
Thank you.
Thank you for the clarification.
Let me follow with a simple question. She filled out supervision forms. And for colleagues here on the board, I'm on page 44. This is a document from JW that essentially is to be completed by the applicant's clinical supervisor. And she lists you on this document as her clinical supervisor at the very top, clinical supervisor's name. And she fills this out in 18, in February of 18. So you're an official supervisor at that point. And she lists the date of clinical supervision as being from 4/1/12 mm-hmm. on to 8/13 of 17. And you fill this out, I believe it's your writing, and sign the form on 2/23 of 18, noting she's above satisfactory and what have you. Both of you should have known that you couldn't sign supervision hours from 4/1 of 12 during that period. you weren't eligible to be a supervisor of her licensing hours during that period. She, as a budding professional, is responsible to know that she can't use you for those hours. You, as a senior clinical person, having been rostered to be a supervisor, know you can't sign that form for those dates, yet you did it. Why?
I think the reason you clearly clarified, I was not distinguishing clinical oversight from clinical supervision.
But you were trained in that differentiation in going through the required board's training and getting your listing as an official supervisor, one whom knows what you can and can't sign.
Yes, and I agree. According to the board regs, I should have known that.
Yes.
But I also acknowledged just now, even up until your point of clarification, that I wasn't distinguishing between clinical oversight and supervision, and that's an error on my part.
That's all questions I had.
Okay.
Any other questions from board members? The other issue that was raised, and I'll speak briefly to, this board has included in its language for rules and statute two words, patient and client. And there's a very particular reason why we have done that legally, in that many times in the healthcare business we're treating patients. But psychologists do more than treat patients. We take responsibility to provide supervision. We take responsibility to provide consultation to attorneys and to many other entities, corporations, and businesses. And as such, the documentation requirements that we have, the ethics that we have, the expectations that we have cover not just the clinical patient, that would be your traditional registered healthcare recipient, but it covers our responsibility to an attorney we're working for, or a supervisee we're supervising, or another entity of which we are consulting. And this board holds the responsibility to protect each of those components of the public. So I would suggest that this board has historically taken that position. I believe it continues to take that position. And one of those areas that, with a shortage of psychologists and behavioral health professionals, especially in public behavioral health, which, by the way, is where 80% of behavioral health funds go. We don't have enough bodies. We have to supervise people. We have to do a heck of a lot more than treat specifically identified patients. So we continue to hold that as our position here, and we are going to uphold the statutes and ethical standards by those definitions, that those folks with which we take responsibility and work for, whether we're supervising them or consulting with them or treating them, fall in the same requirement of our ethics and documentation and the rest of it. All right, if there are no other questions, we're ready to ask if there are any other additional comments or remarks that either of you would like to make before we go into deliberation.
Not at this time.
Thank you, sir. All right. Dr. Flowers, if you would, could you start the board into a deliberation?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In this case, it appears that the applicant and Dr. McCain lacked information regarding what they needed to do. the requirements for licensure and supervision have indeed changed over the years. Also, requirements for supervision for licensed employees is different from those that are not licensed. And what's required for documentation from like a regular employee is different from those seeking licensure in another profession or a higher profession. Can't read minds, but I don't believe that Dr. McCain or the applicant intended to provide fraudulent information to the BBHE. But the documentation had many flaws and was lacking in what's required by today's standards. And kind of underscoring what Dr. Bohansky said, when you look at this, it's like supervision records. Well, it sounds like supervision records be done by a supervisor, even though I know we tell new psychologists, keep track of your supervision records, you'll need them later. So it sounds like it's the onus is on the psychologist, but the trained psychologist with the new license, but indeed those who did the supervision have requirements for documentation too, but they can go away after a bunch of years. I also make note of the fact that Dr. McCain had no supervision contract with the applicant in regards to providing supervision towards her license. He appeared to supervise her as a valued licensed employee or somebody that needed supervision but had a license. And he didn't have a contract that said that you would be in compliance with the requirements of BBHE, but at least near the end, you should have known or did know the requirements. I know there's a lot of gray areas in all this, but I don't really feel there are sufficient grounds to take disciplinary action, but I'm feeling that we should consider issuing a letter of concern for failure to maintain current knowledge regarding supervision requirements for students or employees who are working towards licensure and ensuring that supervision and documentation are in compliance with current standards. And I'd invite feedback and input from other board members regarding this.
Is that a motion, Dr. Farmer?
Well, my plan was to seek input and then make the motion. But I could just make it. Either way is fine.
Can I make a comment?
Certainly.
I guess my concern is, is that this is a on the document that Dr. Bohansky pointed out that's on page 42. This is the application form. This is a form that's given to the Arizona Board of Behavioral Health. It's part of the application process, and in essence, what it does is it says it. At the end of the first page, the applicant was receiving clinical supervision during the period of supervised work experience reported above, and that met the board's requirements. And it's marked, it's answered yes, and then further down, you know, it's signed and it's notarized that this information is correct. And although, you know, I guess what concerns me is maybe, you know, whether it was on purpose or not, the outcome is the person was going to get licensed and maybe didn't have the qualifications. It wasn't a true picture of what occurred, and that is what I find really just kind of as a public member very concerning.
Mr. Chairman, point of order,
sir.
Before we further discuss it, there's a motion on the floor. It needs to be seconded. And
there wasn't.
I asked if it was none.
Yeah. But you said yes.
No, he said no. He
won't. Well, I was wanting input.
Okay. We didn't get there. I was hoping to get to a second and have open discussion.
Yeah.
Then I opened my mouth.
But that didn't quite happen. And I appreciate your parliamentarian position, sir. Are there other questions that you had or input into this discussion?
I agree with what Dr. Flowers says. Okay. There's some areas could be cleaner, but I didn't think that they reached a point of statute violation.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion that I don't feel there are insufficient grounds to take disciplinary action. I move that we issue a letter of concern for failure to maintain current knowledge regarding supervision requirements for students or employees who are working towards licensure and ensuring the supervision and documentation are in compliance with current standards.
Second.
So, Dr. Bohansky, so he was noticed on failing to maintain adequate medical records pursuant to 32-2061-16H. So did you want to language your letter of concern to be failing to maintain adequate supervisory medical records pursuant to 32-2061-16H? Would that be okay?
Yes. Does it say medical records?
And medical records, yes. The word medical records would be
okay.
In there. So failing to maintain adequate supervisory medical records. Am I capturing the essence of what you wanted, Dr. Flowers?
That he violated it?
It's a letter of concern, so it's non-disciplinary, but it does reference, you know, why we're here today, and it will express the board's concerns as it relates to his medical records.
That's the official legal way to do it, then. Great.
Yes.
Are you good with that?
Yes, and indeed,
and
we can find
the second
him to be in
that?
Violation, but yes. Without discipline.
Okay, correct. I have a motion, a second, and an agreement to the language change. Now is there discussion? Did I do that right?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm going to make just a couple quick statements because I always do. This is a tough one for psychologists. The Board of Behavioral Health changes stuff constantly. Keeping up with their stuff is one of our responsibilities if we're going to have them work for us, and we need them to work for us. Being clear about their 3,200 hours that they need to accomplish and making sure that we don't waste that time and have that count against them is critical. And I think that that's as much our responsibility to follow those things as any of the other things that we follow. It only helps those folks we're teaching and those companies that we're working for, and most of all, those patients that we're treating.
Dr. Bohansky, excuse me. I misspoke. The word medical records is not in your statute, but adequate business, financial, professional records pertaining to psychological services. Is that still okay with you?
Thank
you.
Okay.
You're adjusted and okay, and you're adjusted and okay. The motion as amended, re-amended, and then amended again is first and seconded, and we're all set to go. And I've done my lecture. Do we need a roll call?
It's non-disciplinary.
All
you don't
favor,
have to,
aye.
But if you'd like.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
We have one opposed?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. So one opposed, Ms. Shreve, and everyone else is aye. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Very good. Motion has carried.
Great.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right, we have several pieces to move through. And we go to, trying to go down the list, number 16.
That's me.
Oh, good.
All right.
This is the discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding our continued communication with state of Hawaii. Ms. Jones, would you update the board to start us?
Yes. Well, I think, were you going to do it?
Go for it.
Okay. I thought I was.
Oh. I don't know these things.
All right.
They
well,
give me a script and
okay.
It has.
And you follow directions well, let me tell you.
I follow directions well.
So there were four of us here on the board at the time. There was a case probably like now a year or two ago where there was a psychologist that was brought in to do medical exam, psychological examinations on a, what do you call it when they are on, for three separate evaluations for four different police officers. And it was to do for disability.
Yes.
Person came in from Hawaii, the psychologist, and did the evaluation. The four officers separately filed concerns based on the process and what occurred. We spent a long day, maybe a day and a half, on this issue. It was very, very, very hard issue. And we felt, and the board sanctioned the psychologist had a consent. We were like, no, what the person did was wrong. And then later, about a month or two later, we were told by our attorney that that because it was for a disability review, that we didn't have a jurisdiction over it, that there's some type of, in the statute, basically, they're an umbrella that they can't be touched for a complaint by a person that has been, that they've done a disability for.
The definition of physician for disability determination workman's comp includes psychologists.
Right.
And there's a hold harmless in which the board can not hold jurisdiction over the psychologist who we had determined, I did a horrible job on
horrible
mistreating four what I consider heroes, police officers who put their lives on the line and were seriously harmed physically and mentally, and she did not find the PTSD that was more than evident.
So we, at the last discussion, agreed to send a letter. We thought we should send a letter to Hawaii. Heads up, we can't do anything here, but heads up, this complaint came in, and just so you know, because now this psychologist is no longer practicing in Arizona. One of the gentlemen that filed the complaint came in at the last meeting and asked if our board could send a letter to the state workman comp, is it the state, but because they're being denied their claims. And with he had asked if we'd be willing to send a letter saying that we heard the case, we acknowledge potentially the concerns that there were issues, that had we had jurisdiction, we would have moved forward with something. I mean, I think that's in essence what they're looking for. I think they're looking for us to basically stand the plate and say, yeah, there were problems with it. And what you're looking at and making these decisions on these four gentlemen, there are concerns with from a professional association. And with that, I wanted to bring that forward to see if we would feel comfortable in doing so. I personally think we should.
Or if we can legally do it.
Oh, okay, question first. Can we legally do it?
Send a letter to the Workman's Comp Board.
You know, why don't I research that? It's really agendized for follow-up communications with the state of Hawaii.
Oh, that wasn't the... That wasn't.
Am I on the wrong section?
No,
of
you're
agenda?
Right. No, that wasn't...
Well, there's a few questions, and thank you, Ms. Shree, for bringing that. This is important to a bunch of us, and I screamed as much as anybody over this case.
Oh, he did.
I did.
He did.
I got profane. Did we send a letter to Hawaii is, I guess, my first question.
Yes.
Yes.
We know that.
It's in the packet.
Yes. Okay. We provided a copy of it.
I'm just putting on the record.
Absolutely.
The second question was, after our last meeting, I asked us to send a copy of that letter to the complainant's attorney, Mr. Cohen. And did we send a copy of that letter to Mr. Cohen?
Yes.
And in my discussion with Mr. Cohen post-meeting, I asked him to let us know if he, as the attorney of the complainants, could bring that to Workman's Comp representing them, and whether or not that was enough to help these police officers. I have not heard back on that.
I'm not aware of where that went.
Okay. And that becomes a legal question. We provided information that we provided to a sister board about the concerns of essentially inappropriate practice by someone who dropped their license here yet maintained a license there, even though we couldn't take action anymore. We were not licensed here, and we have a statute that says you can't do anything even if they screwed up everything. So the question then becomes, are we leaving our responsible role in almost becoming an advocate by writing a letter to the Workman's Comp Board and pursuing it in an advocacy compassionate way, or is this something that their attorney should be seeking from us, and we give it to their attorney to do something. That's what I'm looking for.
So if you want to have that discussion, to have the board submit a formal letter to the workman's comp, I would probably put this on a future agenda, and I can consult with Ms. Galvin to see if that's something that you all should do. I don't believe you have that in your statutes to kind of send letters to other... I know you send it to boards and criminal agencies who can investigate certain matters, but that would be something that I would look into.
Mr. Chair, I know for at least where I, when we talk about like setting precedents and stuff, I worry about what that opens up for in the future when other and similar groups make the same requests. I do like the idea of making sure that the attorney has access to the information, which is all, you know, minus some that was done in executive session, is public record that he could utilize to represent them. And I do know that they are pretty active. I mean, there's a lot of news and publicity coming out related to this issue as well. So I know they're actively pursuing stuff. I don't know what type of precedents we would want to set in being involved, because there's several interest groups and others now getting involved and a lot of publicity starting to come out on it as well.
So would it be all right just to direct board staff to put that as a future agenda item so the board can address it?
I thought that's what was on here.
That's what that we agreed
apparently
to.
Apparently is.
Yeah.
It was, I was advised to modify it.
Okay.
So that's why.
Okay.
There was a slight change, and perhaps, so we can certainly put it back and so Ms. Galvin can address it.
And then quit.
No offense, Sabrina.
Oh, no, none taken.
It's a difficult issue.
In your letter, though, it's very, very generic in the sense it doesn't, it says you sent backup documents. What were the backup documents?
6 of 10.
Because it doesn't say that we, so, that we had made a, you know, we had made a decision to go forward, but then we realized we couldn't by law. So it didn't, it doesn't really relate that we had serious problems with it. Did we?
Just wanted to make it. Yes, I'm wondering too. I believe they would have access to the meeting transcript. Right?
99% of it was done in executive session.
Yeah.
Okay, but the actual findings of fact was done in the public session. You know, when the attorney said, what are your findings of fact? And we gave quite a damning list. And I would think they could make a request, pay whatever the money is to get a copy from the meeting, and just say, here is what they said and recommended. And that we wouldn't be having to send letters to boards. They would just make a request for a copy of that day of the public.
You know, one of the things that I saw from it was the psychologist by the city of Mesa and Phoenix was limited in what she was to discover, look at. The city of Mesa and the city of Phoenix had no intention of identifying these four people with PTSD. Okay, that's a whole different legal place for me. So I called around. I called New York to find out how they handle these kinds of things. And I forget the name of the gentleman in the, I think it was the Attorney General's office that I talked to. He said that, yes, we had that problem in New York where a psychologist was taking this stuff from cities or whatever, fire departments, and looking at it, and their questions that they wanted discovered were very limited, had nothing to do with PTSD. So they passed a law in New York that said if you had three physicians that determined this was PTSD, it was PTSD, period. Instead of getting a psychologist under the... When I was in the city of Flagstaff, yes, when we had a complaint lodged against us, particularly for industrial kinds of things, the staff immediately sat down with attorneys. Now, what do we really want? How much liability can we have here? And how can we get away from it?
Again, let's put it on the agenda so we can take action. Our job is to protect the public. I'm dead serious.
And the people who protect us in law enforcement are part of the public. And if we can't protect them, we're in trouble.
Right.
And I want to protect this group of men in whatever way we can. And if it means sharing our findings of less than adequate psychological practice to some decision makers, then I want to find a way to do that. Okay. That
legally. Legally.
Make sense?
It does. It is troubling that we have basically victims that are being protected by something we don't like.
But it was so clear, too. That was so
clear. It's black and white. Isn't it?
Mr. Chairman, board members, in my letter that we drafted, we did include all the correspondence from Mr. Cohen,
mm-hmm.
as that's what we had discussed.
Okay.
I did not go back and send all the minutes, but I will. But I'm getting the impression from your discussion today that that's.
We'd like to see them again.
Okay, from the 2-day meeting.
Right. I don't think the why is the issue at this point. I think you sent the stuff to why. I think it's the issue is whatever we want to, if we want to just, you know, provide something to Mr. Cohen or whether, you know, we can make our findings known to the other board.
Mr. Chairman, board members, I understand that, and I will we'll put this on a future agenda for discussion, and I will work with Ms. Galvin so we can have it properly agendized.
Thank you. And properly noticed so we can carry on that discussion.
Mr. Chair, could we also invite Mr. Cohen or at least let him know that it's coming up on the agenda?
Certainly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He's a major stakeholder in this. All right, we have a 5 minutes, and we have a 2:00 scheduled item. So I'm going to run through number 20 quickly. This is an application.
I need to recuse myself.
Yes, for exam and licensing submitted by Dr. Mark Kent. My understanding, the application review committee couldn't forward this to us as approved for the consent agenda because Dr. Myers essentially works with Dr. Kent and had to recuse himself. Dr. Kent apparently works at ASU. So the materials were sent to you to review. I would briefly state that Dr. Kent is a graduate of Alliant University Fresno, was a APA approved program. He completed an internship at Fresno City College of 1800 and plus hours, and then a formal postdoc in Bedford, Massachusetts as part of the VA system consisting of 2000 hours. So he has his degree, he has his 2000 hours completed. He had a position with a temporary license in Maine, and now is ready to take the exam and is looking for permission to take the exam and, if he passes, get licensed. So I would recommend that we move him forward to take the exam.
I'll second.
Motion and second. All in favor, aye.
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 Excellent. We have that one done. Thank you. Somebody please grab Dr. Meyer. Yes, we have to do 23. 23 is discussion, consideration, possible action regarding a report from practice monitor in regards to case number 1726 for Jamie Mantovich.
Mr. Chairman, board members, Dr. Mantovich was placed under a consent agreement, an order, in July of last year. It included 12 months of probation with a practice monitor to review at least 20 cases. She was supposed to have twice per month for a minimum of 2 hours for the first 6 months, and then at the discretion of the supervisor, the meetings may be decreased. And then the supervisor was to submit quarterly reports to us, and then she could request a release after supervision has occurred for no less than 20 evaluations. We did identify a practice monitor that would could work with Dr. Matanovich. He has met with her for several months, and he's provided a secondary report. The first report was not very favorable. The second report is quite favorable. However, he is requesting that he be able to be released from the supervision role. He's stating he does not have the time to continue, and that her caseload, I want to make sure I get the right word, speed, he feels that she's learning. However, he does not feel that there will be enough time to review the 20 cases that were outlined in the consent agreement. So we brought this forward for you today to consider Dr. Stafford's request and whether or not you wish to release her or if we should go back and try to find another practice monitor for her to complete. Although we may have to extend the consent agreement because they don't have, it looks like they would not be anywhere near having the 20 cases done by this July.
I got a comment.
Ms. Shreve?
If I'm recalling right, this was an individual that was doing school reviews on students. Is that the right person? And I think that we should continue with at least the 20, considering the first report wasn't very good. She was having a hard time understanding it. This was a whole new process or level, you know, different. She was upgrading to the newer versions of whatever the test was she was supposed to be providing. I think that we continue until she meets the 20 and she continues to get more positive comments.
I would agree. It says that the doctor arrives late to schedule supervision meetings. Doesn't seem to me like she's really taking it seriously, in my opinion. Has difficulty learning how to score the WAIT 3. And she has speed in learning the intricacies of assessments. And the Dr. Stafford continues, says 1 year may not be enough time to complete the 20 required cases. She should not be released from it.
Now, the second report kind of updated
that
and was much more positive and what have you. The concern is that the doctor who's providing the supervision is being asked to be released from his contract with us to supervise her. And what that does is, I think we're generally of the consensus that she should continue to be supervised. We need to find a new supervision monitor. So I think this is best handled by going back to our staff and asking them to secure another contractual arrangement with another monitor and see if we can provide her with such and her attorney with such names so she can make connection and continue. Is that consensus of board? That's consensus.
Would you like to extend the term of probation, maybe? There's still a provision where she can petition for early termination once she completes the 20. It's up to you.
I'd like to see how well she does.
Okay.
If she can get wrapped up in 20, that's great. I just as soon she get her training in and be done with it and not have this drag on forever.
So, Mr. Chairman, board members, just so I can clarify for the record, so I will advise Dr. Stafford that he may
refer her
his
back.
Services.
Yeah.
And then we will try to identify a new practice monitor for
yes.
her. Thank you very much.
And if anyone has any ideas on wonderful practice monitors, please provide those to our staff as soon as possible. All right, we have a 2 o'clock discussion, which is number 18. This is discussion, consideration, possible action regarding determination of jurisdiction in relation to complaints 1825 from regarding Dr. John DeBonner. Ms. Jones, would you provide an update for the board?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, board members. Dr. Dunbar is represented by Marty Eaves. Mr. Eaves, are you on the phone?
I'm here.
Thank you. And I believe the complainant is also here today, as she has been following this matter and wanted to speak to the board possibly. This is a matter where we received a complaint, and when we sent it to Dr. Dunbar, we received a response from his attorney that that this patient was seen as an IME, an independent medical examiner.
I don't think they can
hear you. Mr. Eaves, can you hear us?
All right, we cannot hear you. You need to speak directly in your mic.
We got somebody coming to look at it.
He's going to try to call back.
Actually, I think we just need a microphone. I think you're all right. Just a moment.
That's not going to help him hear us.
No, he's going to call back.
Okay. Can he call back?
Go ahead and call back.
Mr. Eaves?
Hello.
Great. Thank you. So if I may continue, Mr. Chairman, board members, Mr. Eaves represented that Dr. Dunbar had seen this patient as a result of an IME. We obtained the records from Banner and Dr. Erickson, who was the treating physician, at our last, and it was quite an extensive file. At last month's meeting, we were asked to obtain the records from Dr. Dunbar showing that it was an IME. His response was that he did not have any records, that all the records were under the Banner file, and we had already subpoenaed that record from Dr. Erickson. So you do have a copy of all the records that we are aware of. So your question today is whether or not you have jurisdiction, as we have not moved forward or received a response to the complaint as of yet, pending this IME decision. Thank you.
The question before us then today is to simply determine whether or not we have jurisdiction.
Yes, sir. Yes.
That's what I'm hearing?
Yes, Dr. Bohansky. And I did consult with Jean Galvin. So if you'd like to go into executive session for legal advice, that's your option.
So move.
Did you want to hear from Mr. Eaves first? Or
yeah. Yeah, let's hear Mr. Eaves' argument. Mr. Eaves, would you like to make a presentation?
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Bohansky. I'll be brief. The only records that we have are the records that we provided, which is Dr. Denbor's report. His report does say that it is a workman's compensation claim right at the outset of the report. We have been asking for the Banner records because this was done at Banner Concussion Center, and I had hoped that the board would subpoena those and supply them to us so that we could view them to better flush out our argument. I agree those are relevant. Those have not been provided to us, and so I haven't had a chance to look at those. So my argument is somewhat limited based on the records that I have seen, which do tend to indicate this was a workman's compensation claim. But if there are additional records and if those bear on the issue, I think we should have a chance to look at those so that we could make cogent arguments or make strategic decisions based on whatever is contained in those records.
Okay, that seems to be a reasonable argument. I would agree that both sides should have an opportunity to look at the records that are there. Do we have authority to share records that we've subpoenaed with opposing counsel?
I believe you do. He's a respondent in this matter.
Okay.
But I can double check that with Ms. Galvin.
All right, let's look at that because I want this fairly clear.
Okay.
And I have no problem making sure we're on the right path before we go forward.
Okay.
Do we need to take any action here today?
You know, Dr. Bohansky, you could probably just continue the matter.
Okay.
We have a...
The complainant here, if she would like to make a presentation before we do anything else with it.
Okay. Absolutely. I just wanted to tell you.
Would you just come up?
Okay.
Yeah, we got the darn mic things you got to talk into.
You want me to sit here? Or?
Please.
Yes, I am the complainant, and I am here today to address this claim that Dr. Dunbar's evaluation of me was an IME, because it was not an IME. I was referred to Dr. Dunbar by Dr. Erickson, and it came out of an appointment in which I asked Dr. Erickson to address challenges I was having doing my job after being injured. And so Dr. Erickson thought the best place to start would be for me to have a neuropsychological evaluation. And because Dr. Dunbar was evaluating Banner patients at the time, he referred me to Dr. Dunbar. So, in fact, he walked me out to his scheduler on that day, and I booked the appointment with Dr. Dunbar myself. I was covered by workers' comp, but they were not involved in the decision for me to have the evaluation, the selection of Dr. Dunbar, or any of the scheduling of the appointments.
Let me ask you a quick question, if you're open. We're going to have to make a determination about that. You were being treated at Banner.
Yes.
And were you having your services paid for by workman's comp?
Yes, I had been injured at a work event, and so my company had instructed me to open a workers' compensation claim to cover the expenses.
Okay. Very good. Mm-hmm. And your primary doctor referred you as part of his evaluation?
Actually, Dr. Erickson was my doctor for the purposes of
the concussion,
but not my primary care physician.
Was he an IME? Was his evaluation an IME, or was he the treating doctor?
He was the treating doctor. Dr. Erickson was the treating doctor.
So your treating doctor referred you for neuropsych testing to help him with his evaluation and treatment of you?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Excellent. Then I'm going to continue this, and I would like Jeannie to get together with Mr. Evans.
Eves.
I'm sorry. And get the records that we have subpoenaed, if that's appropriate, which let the attorneys work that out, so that everybody's got the same things to look at. He's heard the same things we've heard. And we'll go from there. I'd like this to pop up on our next agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We were not aware that they wanted a copy, but we'll work with them. Thank you.
Good.
Thank you, Dr. Bohansky.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. We will move on with, we're down to 19.
And 22.
Yeah, we got 22 as well. Discussion, consideration, possible action regarding an update information from the Auditor General's Office regarding the Sunset Audit Report. Ms. Jones, if you would please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Board Members, I have provided you all a copy of the Auditor General's Report. It is quite lengthy. It just came out Wednesday afternoon, and it was quite a busy last couple of months trying to get it to an agreeable resolution. They had several issues, but the final outcome was they would like us to fingerprint applicants, both behavior analysts and psychologists, and they also want us to fingerprint on renewal or verify fingerprints on renewal. We would be the first board in the state that would require that. In statute, at least from my information, we
not
would be
fingerprinting renewal.
We would need to verify if we go with the fingerprint verification or fingerprint clearance cards. We would just need to verify a current clearance card at the time of renewal.
Okay.
We would not have to fingerprint because our prior discussion before the board was that we were going to move towards the fingerprint clearance card, not the actual fingerprinting.
Okay.
So.
Yes.
And that's those right. cards, I believe, are good for 6 years. So yes. It would not be believed to be an unduly burden on the licensee. The other concerns were timely revision or resolution of claims and complaints. I'm happy to report that in FY19 so far, our resolution time frame on claims is 59 days, and our resolution day on time frame on complaints is 124 days, much shorter than the time frames they looked at. Please remember they were looking at figures from 2017. So we've done a lot of work and made a lot of changes in the past year.
And that's going to be the best year ever.
They've asked us to review our fees. I received the third quarter numbers on Wednesday afternoon and was going through the revenue. Of course, they are comparing FY16, which was a non-renewal year, with FY17, which was a full renewal cycle for everyone. And then FY18, which had a lot of
renewals
also. So I don't, our numbers so far this year, and I'll present those at next month's meeting, our renewals, our income, our revenue levels will not be as high as those numbers.
Suggest.
And so we won't have the surplus that they were quite concerned about. We do have a fund, a healthy fund, but we also have our expenses continue to increase, especially with all the IT changes we're incurring. So I just need some time to work on that. I our final number, like I said, I just got our third quarter numbers Wednesday evening, and I think that will work itself out in the next couple months. The final item that they were concerned about was outsourcing our licensure requirements to the BACB. We will address their requests and concerns and go forward from there with whatever the board decides to do on that. So I appreciate everyone's support and patience through this process. I'm glad the report has been issued. We will have a 6-month follow-up. We will also have a possible 12, but for sure an 18-month follow-up, because they want to make sure that we've put everything in place. We're continuing to maintain all the new measures and tracking methods, and that we're actually improving our numbers.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Any discussion, input from board?
Just with regard to your statement around the BACB, my understanding is that the recommendations are they're looking for us to use a little bit more of that and cut down duplication. That seems to be their recommendation areas and their findings, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Davey, yes. They want us to accept BACB to waive certain requirements of our licensure. And that's something we're going to have to look at.
But that was not their recommendation. Their recommendation was not to rely on the national. I mean, their recommendation was to look at it and perhaps see how we can use it. It was not that we're currently relying on it too much or too little. Correct?
Correct.
Okay.
And I'm sorry if I misspoke. No, they're just asking us to utilize the BACB.
What we feel is appropriate. What we believe to be appropriate.
And fair. Mr. Chair, I believe that the request is that the board look into what they could use, not use, and make a decision as to why they wouldn't use some of the duplicated stuff. So at this point, it's just having the meeting to have the discussion.
I think that that's what their request is that we have a meeting to have a discussion. Clearly, if a national organization and BCAB, they've been changing their requirements fairly consistently. Well, statutes don't change that quickly. So what we have to do is look at what's feasible, what's practical, what makes sense, and quite frankly, what doesn't give up control or responsibility of this board to a national entity. And As much as I think the governor likes to streamline things, I don't think anybody in Arizona wants to give up control over those things, Arizona. So we want to make sure that we're aware of that. This is also going to require, beginning this second half of this year, that we have some meetings, because we have to show that we have done something toward reaching these goals. One of the things we got to do is stakeholder meetings on this fingerprint thing. We got to talk to the psychologists and the psych association and whomever to figure out what their input is on it. We got to talk amongst ourselves in a legislative committee setting to take what happens if somebody fails their fingerprint card. Does that void their psychology license? We got all kind of questions in terms of what this new requirement's going to mean. And what's the threshold for this stuff? You're a licensed psychologist for 30 years, and you go to renew your license, and you get a rejection on your fingerprint card. Does that mean you lose your license? No one's crossed this bridge, so we got to look at this stuff and see what we're going to suggest. It's just not a matter of saying you got to have a fingerprint card. What happens if you can't get one? We got to look at the consequences of this stuff. Most of us work in public health. We've had to have fingerprint cards for years. I carry one in my wallet now. But that doesn't mean at some point they ain't going to take it away from now. I just think we need to look at the ramifications of some of this stuff. I want to commend staff. They've done a heck of a job. For those of you who don't know or don't recall, this is a multi-person audit team that's in their offices damn near a year. I didn't think we generated enough paper for somebody to sit there for a year and look at it. You know, I got a company about 50 times larger than this board, and we get audited by Access, and every Tom, Dick, and Harry, nobody's there more than a week. These folks were there a year, so they looked up everything. And I think somebody ought to audit the Audit General and find out what the hell they do with their time. But I appreciate a good look-see at what we do. I appreciate staff jumping very quickly on making changes and modifications and keeping better track of the day processes and keeping in mind a lot of those times are out of our control. People ask for continuances. It's in our rules that they get them. Now that builds the days on. There's not a lot we can do. It's not like we're continuing people's cases. The people involved are continuing their cases. So I was a little bit disappointed that stuff isn't as clear in the report as it could be. If you look at those cases that are longer, not because our staff wasn't up to it, not because we didn't act as a board, it's because the folks involved were continuing these things under authority within the existing rules. So, but regardless, we're keeping good track, and I'm pleased with that. Each of you who get claims and look at them quickly, make your decision, return them. Please don't sit on them. That's one of the things they're monitoring us for. So if you're getting that, we got to turn that stuff around. Make sure we don't sit on it. I know I've sat on more than one. One of my resolutions was to turn them around within the next day or two, and I've done that on the last half dozen I've had. So let's kind of commit to do that kind of stuff, if that makes sense.
I think it would be important to, since this audit is very important to someone, that we follow up on it. That would be a good idea that every time we have one of these meetings, it'd be a line item.
That's a good idea. I like that, Mr. Don. For the rest of the year, let's have a standing item on our progress toward the Auditor General's recommendation.
That means we're not just sitting our thumbs. The other thing, too, when we were first discussing this stuff, some board members said, well, one of the reasons there is a surplus, possibly, is not every psychologist, every board member, charges for the time they serve on this board. So is there some way of keeping track of that?
We do keep track of the number of unclaimed hours.
Yeah, but when you put it on that form, it subtracts from the numbers you have at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So how about a separate form that I know the telephonic meetings. Sometimes those telephonic meetings take a heck of a long time. I never charge for any time for that. I don't know if anybody does. But when you're preparing for that telephonic meeting and you have a telephonic meeting, those are hours that we're contributing to this agency. So there should be some way of keeping track of those.
Yeah, we'll talk about better ways to track that in the office.
Yeah. I believe we do, but I'll double check. Yeah. I thought we had sheets because I know I filled out.
What I did was wanted some of that information in the Auditor General's report that they know that there's a tremendous volume of dollars that are donated back to this organization by the very board members who sit on it and not claimed. And I wanted them to see that number as well.
Yeah, well, yeah, how many hours are those unless we have something?
Yeah, we got a total of those for them.
Yeah, for the board members, too, it would be important to have that kind of information because it's
yeah.
It's important for your for when you file your taxes.
That I don't know about. I'd have to ask a tax attorney. Okay, thank you for the stuff on the report, and I like that idea, Mr. Donaldson, of having a standing update line as to how we're doing in those things that we're being monitored on and that they're going to come back and look at. All right. My gosh. Number 22.
Mr. Chairman, board members.
It's 222. I just want to.
I will be done by 225.
No. 222. Right there. And we're on item number
22.
And it's the last. Go ahead.
Fabulous job today. Thank you. So I appreciate everybody's cooperation in moving today's meeting to an in-person because next month, May 3rd, will be by phone. Just to remind everyone. Unfortunately, that means we wouldn't have, based on our current schedule, another in-person meeting until August. So I didn't know how you all felt about possibly having an in-person in June, just because we will have some items to discuss, I'm sure.
I'm fine with it.
Would that be the June 7th meeting?
That's June 7th in person. And I certainly look at your schedules, let me know in the next week or so, but I think that would be helpful, and then that keeps our presence with the public on a regular basis. And then after that, our next in-person would be August 9th. I will also report that with our caseload, we are caught up with complaints. So I do not anticipate having a May CSC meeting.
Excellent.
I'm canceling that.
I'm going to ask for a substitute for a May ARC meeting. I will be in China.
Let's just go there.
I will ask.
I've covered a lot of them. I'm asking for someone to help cover this one.
Okay. We will find that for you.
Thank you.
But so I will cancel the May CSC. The May meeting, board meeting, will be in person, and we'll meet by phone, and we'll meet in person in June.
Right.
So May is canceled. Okay.
That's it.
Question.
Yes, sir.
With this new stuff that's on the website.
Yes, sir.
We pick up the board materials. We'll be able to put those on these memory sticks, or are we?
So,
what?
Thank you for your patience. And this new system came available at the very last week of March, and that's why we put the supplemental items on those. For our next meeting for June, we're going to have all the materials on the website. So you'll have one place to go. We won't worry about the thumb drives are very expensive and to send out, and we seem to have the mail machines eat a couple of them every month. So we're going to use the online for all of June, and we will send you updates if we have to add supplemental materials. Is that okay?
Yeah, the only concern I had with the online, Lisa, was when you opened a document, a PDF, it downloads. You have to open it.
So it's now on your computer. So if you're not using the state computer, it's on your computer under down, you know, when you get all the downloads. So I had to go back and I deleted them all. But just kind of heads up, because they're confidential.
Mm-hmm. The IT department told us it would stay within the system.
It made it when I clicked on it, it downloaded, and then you have to open, and then opened it, and I went down to my, you know, then you went to the download file. I'm not an IT person, you know, and there they were. So I deleted them all because I don't want them on my computer. But just that's the only thing I had my comment on.
Thank you. I was not aware of that. We were told that would not happen. So thank you very much. I'll follow up on that.
If we use that system, then we have to have access to the internet here.
Yes, and we do.
We do.
Yes.
Yeah, because what I did was transfer that stuff over to this memory stick.
Well, what we'll probably do, just because I don't want to risk if we lose internet in the building or lose whatever, when you come to the meeting, we'll have a thumb drive for you with all the materials. But as far as reviewing them in preparation for the meeting, it'll all be there. Yeah. But I also need to get Ms. Shreve's concern addressed, because we were assured it wouldn't go outside of the thing.
I think the download stuff deletes itself when you close the web page.
It didn't.
Yeah. It didn't.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Shreve, can I ask you a question? What browser were you using?
Chrome.
Okay. Thank you.
I personally like the option of being able to download it and putting it on a stick.
Yeah.
Because you know, I'm always afraid that I won't get access next time around. You know, then like yesterday I had a panic, had to send you a request, please remind me where this is. If I have a stick, once I get it, I've got it. I can delete it later.
Okay. But I don't want it to automatically download. I'd rather have it be
okay.
An option.
Okay, I've never noticed that. I've always been excited to get it and put it where I want it. And of course, if I'm in a public computer, I mean, tutorial quickly I learned, if I go to a public computer,
you can't.
And look at it, huge cautions for all those reasons. I mean, if you make the mistake of just automatically signing in, that means anybody on the planet using the computer can see our board materials. I mean, but I guess that goes without saying, just be cautious with data.
So we will not be sending out flash drives, at least that's the plan at this point for the June meeting. I'm sorry, the May meeting. But we will have flash drives when you get here, just because I don't want to risk something happening to us being unable to move forward with the board meeting. Thank you very much.
Agenda item 25. Are there new items for future meetings that have not already been forwarded today? Hearing none.
You've done a great job leading the meeting, too, by the way.
Agenda item 26. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
I want to stay here.
You want to stay?
Yeah.
Okay, you can.
I motion.
We have a motion. A second.
Second.
All in favor, aye.
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 Joe abstains, but he's going to stay.
That's okay. All by himself.
Thanks, everybody. Himself. You helped us get through this one.
Yep.
I thought for sure we'd be here at the Midnight Oil.
Thank you.